Good morning. Today's daf in Ksuvos Mem Vav. We're on Mem Hey Amud Beis. We are at the 2 dots, 1 dot, Tana Rabbanan. We are starting towards the bottom of the Amud. It's about a dozen lines from the bottom. Our topic of discussion for most of today is going to be continuation of the Parsha Motzi Shemra. Motzi Shemra, a variation of a woman who is Mizana. She commits adultery, but under a very specific set of circumstances in which she was an Arama Rasa, she marries a man, and then the man levels an accusation on her that she was not faithful, and that during Erusin she was infidel. She displayed infidelity. And now his accusation in of itself, as we've discussed already time and again, that in of itself is insufficient. Obviously, you need testimony, you need to have witnesses in order to testify that she was in fact with another man. If in fact he's able to procure those witnesses, now when I say he procures, obviously they have to have seen it. We're going to be talking a little bit more this morning about what does that mean exactly that he procures the witnesses. But when he procures the witnesses, so under those circumstances, one of two possibilities. Number one, the witnesses are telling the truth, at which point in time she's Mizana. She commits adultery while she's an Arama Marasa. Yesterday we went through in detail that in Parshas Kiseitze, in Perek Chavbeis, there's two versions of Na'ara Marasa. Na'ara Marasa, the standard Na'ara Marasa, who's going to be subject to Skila, and then Na'ara Marasa within the context of Motzi Shemra, meaning that if you have Znus, adultery of Na'ara Marasa, within the context of Motzi Shemra, so it's also going to be subject to the Skila penalty, the Skila punishment, but in front of her father's house, as opposed to standard Na'ara Marasa who commits adultery, where there the Skila is going to be just simply in front of Beis Din. Okay, that was yesterday's daf. But anyway, so what we learned yesterday, and we're going to continue discussing today, is going to be the various consequences of Motzi Shemra. Now, that's if the Edom are telling the truth. Now, let's go to the other side. What if the Edom are lying? So if the Edom are lying, so first of all, if the Edom are lying and they're caught to be Edom Zomimim, so we know what's going to happen to the Edom and that it's going to be that whatever they attempted to conspire and attempted to do to the defendant, the same thing's going to happen to them. That's the whole parsha of Edom Zomimim, which means that their conspiracy wanted to result in Skila, so they themselves are going to be subject to Skila. Okay, but that's by the Edom Zomimim. What about the husband? The husband who now maligned his wife, right, brought Edom that were not good Edom and maligned his wife. So what happens to the husband? So this we didn't discuss yet in much detail, but we did go through the Psukim. The Psukim outlined that there are going to be threefold punishment for the husband. Number one, he's going to be subject to Malkus. Number two is that he's going to have to pay a fine of 100 shkalim. And number three, they're married, so the requirement to get married is obviously not necessary. They're already married, but he may not divorce her. He's prohibited from divorcing her. So this too is part of the equation of Motzi Shemra. We're going to be discussing this in more detail this morning. Tana Rabbanan. So with all that stated in Mem Hamad Beis, we are going to be learning a Braisa. Motzi Shemra lo kivanose me'asela. So someone who's Motzi Shemra. So we are now focusing on the husband who has maligned his wife. In other words, the witness is proven to be false witnesses. So this is, he's going to be subject to Malkus, and he's going to have to pay Me'asela, 100 shkalim. So Rabbi Yehuda Amar Lokos Lokem, Mikom Akom. So Rabbi Yehuda says that the Malkus are coming under all circumstances. However, Me'asela Baal Nosein, Lo Baal Eino Nosein. But as far as 100 shkalim are concerned, that's only if the husband was with her. Meaning, the only time that the husband is going to be subject to the Malkus is only if he was with her the first night. But if he wasn't with her the first night, so then he's not going to be subject to the Me'ash Golem. Now, B'maikam Iflagi, the Gemara says, what is the at the root of the debate over here? B'plukta, the Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, V'rabbanan, V'hachikamar. So it's what they're arguing about over here is the Machlokas Tanaim that we're going to be learning later on this morning. Meaning, we'll see the Machlokas of Rav Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim later on. What the Gemara now is going to do is plug in the shitas of the Tanakam and Rav Yehuda within this machlokas. V'hachi kamar hamotzi shemer lokim v'nosei me'asela bein baal bein shlo baal kirabanan. So the one who says that motzi shemra is subject to malchus and is going to be giving is going to be paying 100 shkalim, that is irrespective of whether or not he was with his wife or he wasn't with his wife. Either way, meaning in the next morning, if in the event that he wakes up and for whatever reason, they didn't have relations, but still he levels his charges against her. So according to the Tanakhama, which is also the Shita Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, subject to getting Malkus and subject to paying 100 shkalim. Okay, later this morning, we're going to try to navigate through the Psukim. The Psukim do not indicate this. The Psukim seem to indicate that all the ramifications and all the punishments are going to be only after he was with her, after the husband was with her. So later this morning, if this position over here seems a little bit strange, because you know the Psukim, great. The Gemara later on is going to be bothered by these very questions. Anyway, and Rav Yehuda Amar Lokos Lokim Mikom Makom, and Rav Yehuda will tell you as follows. Now, as far as Malkus is concerned, he's going to be subject to Malkus. And it doesn't matter whether he was with her or whether he wasn't with her. Meaning, let's do the following. Okay, to explain the Sheet of Rav Yehuda just a little bit better. How about we just take the entire Motzi Shemra Parsha out of the picture for just a moment? Meaning, what just happened? What just happened is that he maligned his wife. Okay, and what do we call that in Halacha? It's called Lashon Hara. Now, I know Lashon Hara is a generic term. It's a broader term. But anytime you speak poorly about somebody else, it files under one of the categories of the Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara, Motzi Shemra, Rechilus. Okay, there is obviously a little bit more in terms of details, but as far as the Torah is concerned, anytime you speak poorly about somebody else, you malign somebody, so you are violating the Torah. Okay, now, let's, just for argument's sake, let's say it falls under the category of Rechilus. Okay, that's imprecise, but just to make the point, it doesn't really matter. Okay, so what did you just do? You violated the Torah. Okay, now, question, are you subject to Malkus? Under normal circumstances, the answer is going to be no. Meaning, when are you subject to Malkus? Only when you violate a lav in the Torah. Then and only then you're going to be subject to Malkus. Sorry, let's do that better. When you violate a lav in the Torah, sheyesh bo maisa, that has an action with it. Sorry, I'm all over the place. That has an action to it, right? A lav sheyesh bo maisa. Then and only then you're going to be subject to Malkus. But if it's a lav sheyesh bo maisa, but if it's a lav that doesn't have a maisa to it, so you're not going to be subject to Malkus. So that's normally what you would say. So, if I were to remove Motzi Shemra out of the equation and just simply say you maligned your wife, you went to Beis Din and you started telling stories about your wife, stories that aren't true, and you burn witnesses, but the point is that there's no Maisa, there's no action over here, so you're not going to get Malkus. Good. Now, let's turn our attention to the Shita Rabbi Yehuda. What does Rabbi Yehuda hold throughout Shas? Rabbi Yehuda throughout Shas is of the position that even a lav shem b'maisa, you're going to get Malkus. Oh, okay. So now, as far as our explanation of the Sheet of Rav Yehuda is concerned, so whether the husband was with his wife or whether he wasn't with his wife, so he's going to get Malkus. Do you know why? It's very simple. Because Rav Yehuda l'shita so. Rav Yehuda is of the position that you're going to get Malkus for a lav shem b'maisa. Okay. So it has nothing to do with Motzi Shemra. It just simply has to do with the fact that he spoke poorly about his wife. He maligned her. For that reason and for that reason alone, you're going to get Malkus, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Now what about Motzi Shemra? Rabbi Yehuda will tell you that as far as Motzi Shemra is concerned, so then you're only going to be subject to the other punishment, and then the other punishment is the Knas, only when he was with her. That's the Gemara's explanation. Okay, good. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Lokos Lokim Mikom Makom Meyasel Abal Nosein La Nosein Lo Bal Ein Nosein. Okay. So as far as the Shita of Rav Yehuda is concerned, so that's the Shita of Rav Yehuda, Kerebi Elazar ben Yaakov. And Lobal Einonos, think Kerebi Elazar ben Yaakov. Yeah, good. So that is that's now the explanation of Rav Yehuda. So where are we right now? Basic Machlokas Tanayim, in terms of when exactly you're going to be subject to the punishments of Malkus and the punishments of Knas. And so we have it now that according to the Chachamim, they're only going to both be in place only when he was Boel. According to Rav Yehuda, even if he wasn't Boel her, but he maligned her the next day, he's going to be subject to Malkus. Again, Rav Yehuda lishita so, because Rav Yehuda is of the position that Lav Shem B'Maisa are going to get Malkus. As far as Knas is concerned, Rav Yehuda will tell you that the Knas is only when he was Boel her. Which again is a simple reading of the Psukim. That's the Shita Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. We'll talk more about that later this morning. Ika de Amre. Now, we're going to do this again. We're going to do a slightly different version. Again, we go back to the Braisa. Our morning started off with a Braisa, where, Motzi Shemer, whether or not you're going to get Malkus and pay the Knas, and whether that's contingent on having Bia with her. Now, Ikedam Rikula Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. Everyone's in agreement with Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. Again, we'll see Rav Elazar ben Yaakov later this morning. So he's of the position that Motzi Shemra is only coming into play only when he had relations with his wife. V'achi kamra, Motzi Shemra loka v'nosei me'asela v'hu shabal. So according to the Tanakhama, that's only when he had Bia with her. Again, that's a simple reading of the Psukim. We're going to go through the Psukim later this morning. Now, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Lokos Loke Mikamakom. Now, and Rabbi Yehuda is of the position that, no, with or without Bia, you're going to get Malkus. And again, Rabbi Yehuda Lishitaso, because Rabbi Yehuda is of the position that you always get Malkus for maligning others. Vesav Rabbi Yehuda Lokos Loke Mikamakom. I tell you, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Baal Loke. Lo baal eino loke. So the Gemara now points out that we have a discrepancy within the Shita Rebbe Yehuda, because we have another Brisa, and this Brisa says that you getting Malkus is only going to be in a case where the husband had relations with his wife on that first night of marriage. Otherwise, the husband is not going to get Malkus. Okay, so now where are we? Confused. Because Rebbe Yehuda, on one hand, says that you're always going to get Malkus. On the other hand, Rebbe Yehuda says that Malkus will only be contingent on Bia. So that is what's called a stira. So Amrav Nachman Yitzchak Loka Malkus Mardus Midrabanan. So one attempted answer of the Gemara is, well, maybe when Rabbi Yehuda previously says you're going to get Malkus, that's not Malkus Minatora, but that's Malkus Mardus. It's Malkus the Rabbanan, rabbinic Malkus, but not Minatora. Okay, now this admittedly is confusing, and it did take me a while to just try to wrap my head around this. This is absolutely confusing because just minutes earlier, you probably heard me say and remembered me say that according to Rav Yehuda, you always get Malkus because Rav Yehuda is of the position that you get Malkus for even a Lav Shein Bo Maisa. That's what Rav Yehuda's position is. And so therefore, when we said earlier this morning that it makes sense that according to Rav Yehuda, you're always going to get Malkus, even if we remove the Parsha Motzi Shemra, you malign a person, you speak Lashon Hara about a person, according to Rav Yehuda, you violate the Torah, you're going to get Malkus, period. Now, here's what we're saying. Then, because we have a stira within the Shita Rav Yehuda, what we're saying now is that for Motzi Shemra, you're not going to get Malkus. Rav Yehuda says you're going to get Malkus. That's only Malkus min Derabanan. That's not Malkus min Torah. What? What just happened over here? We just flipped Rav Yehuda on his head. So perhaps, and this is a perhaps, an explanation of this approach to Rav Yehuda. What we'll say is that Rav Yehuda throughout Shas holds that you're going to get Malkus for a Lav Shein Bo Maisa, with notable exception to Motzi Shemra, meaning Motzi Shemra becomes the exception to the rule, according to Rav Yehuda. Why should it be the exception to the rule? Because the Torah says you get Malkus, meaning that the Torah says that only Motzi Shemra under the strictest of circumstances, and that would be where he married the woman, he had relations with the woman, then and only then do you get Malkus, but under normal circumstances, meaning within the context of Motzi Shemra, you're not going to get Malkus. Now, everything I just said, I know is confusing. I know it's hard to wrap our heads around what is the Shita Rav Yehuda regarding Malkus and Motzi Shemra, but clearly what's happening is that there's a stira within the Shita Rav Yehuda, and what the Gemara is attempting to do is try to resolve the stira. But again, in this latest resolution, so it comes out that Rav Yehuda really is not going according to his normal position. Rav Papa Amar, we're continuing in the Gemara, we're in Mem Vav Amid Aleph. Rav Papa Amar, my Baal, loke diktani hasam, mamon. When it says that he's going to get Malkus, so Rav Papa says, here's how I'm going to resolve Rav Yehuda. And this will be an easier resolution, Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda normally is of the position that you're going to get Malkus for a Lav Shein Bo Maisa, and that means that whether he had relations with her, whether he didn't, he maligned her, he's going to get Malkus. Period. That's Rav Yehuda's Shita. The Brisa that says Rav Yehuda is only, you're going to get Malkus only in the occasion where first they had relations with each other, he didn't mean Malkus. You know what Malkus means over there? Malkus means that you're going to have to pay money. Meaning, knas. Malkus means not literally to get lashed, but Malkus means that you're going to get, as an expression, you're going to get beaten. But beaten over here meaning financially. That's what Rav Yehuda meant. And it's not unprecedented. We do find other places where the word loke means that you're going to get hit financially. The Gemara here gives an example. So, Hasamaman. Vekari le lamama Malkus. The Gemara says, really? That happens? The Gemara says, sure, it happens. Vatanan. So here is just an example. Hamer chatzi erka elai nosin chatzi erko. So let's say I'm going to give half of his erech. So erchin. So that is going to be the value of a person based on age and gender. And just look up at the end of Parshas Bechukosai, and you'll see what the schedule of payment is over there. And so you say that you're going to give half of a person's erech. So you're going to give half. Okay, simple. And Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Loke, Venosin Erech Shalem. And Rav Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda says you're going to get Malkus, and you pay the full Erech. Now, what does that mean? Loka am I? You're getting Malkus? What did you do wrong that you're getting Malkus over here? So Amar Papa Loka be Erech Shalem. No, Loka means you're going to get financially hit. In other words, even though may Ikar Hadin, you only owe half the Erech, because that's the only thing you committed yourself to, but because of your formulation, the Chachamim stepped in and said, no, you're going to be paying the full amount. That's a slap on the wrist, a financial slap on the wrist. And you see over here, the whole point over here is that we're using the word loka to describe a financial slap. Right? You could call it a kanas. Okay. In other words, it's a penalty. For what? And the Gemara goes on to explain. So my time, because when you say chatzi erki, that's one step away from saying erich chatziav. I want to give the erich of half of him. Okay, so I'll take a person, I'll divide him into two, not literally, and I'm going to give erich of just half the person. Now, what do we know? We know the halacha is that erich is really all or nothing. If long as you assign the erich of a significant portion of the body. Significant, what's the definition of significant? Very simple. If I took it away, would the person live? If the answer is no, that's pretty significant, right? Vital organs, if you will. So once I am giving erech of half of a person's got to have a vital organ. And so therefore, I'm really now on the hook for a full erech. So erech chetzio versus chatzi erech, they're really similar to one another. Anyone and everyone would be confused about that. So therefore, regardless of which way you ordered it, so the Chachamim slapped you on the wrist and say that you have to pay a full erech. The whole point over here is that you see that the word loke just sometimes can mean financially being slapped. Tana Rabbanan. Mem vav amud alef, about 10 lines from the top of the amud. V'anshu oso zem amun. V'yisru zem malkus. Okay, so I know we've said this, but we never really connected it to the psukim. How do I know what the punishments of the Motzi Shemra is? So it's in the psukim, but in the psukim itself, words like onesh and yisru. So what do they mean? Good. So that's what we have. It's called Torah Sheval Peh. It's today's daf. So anshu is referring to mamon, right? Punishment monetarily, and yisru is malchus. So the Gemara says, how do we get there? So bishlama v'anshu zeh mamon dichsi v'anshu oso mea kesef v'nasnu lavi anaram. Good. So we have precedent that onesh can mean a monetary punishment. Ela v'yisru zeh malchus min alan. But let's go to V'Yisru. How do I know that that's a reference to Malkus? So Amr Rabbi Abba Lamanu Yisru mi Yisru V'Yisru mi Ben Uben mi Bin Vaya im Bin Hakos HaRasha. Okay. A series of psukim, right? Multiple Gzereshava words connected one to the other. Okay. Second day in a row where we had Gzereshavas which were strung together, not one to one, but right, basically three connectors connecting Gzereshava. I'm not going to go through the psukim right now. Please forgive me. But the point is that we have a misara. We have a gzeira shava. Misara in terms of how we know that the word v'yisra is connected to malchus. Azhar lamotzi shemra minala. Next. So we know that the Torah spells out the punishments. We also know the following. There's a rule throughout Shas. And that is that ein onshin ela im kein mazhirin. The only time that a person gets onish is only when there is an azhara. The Torah has to warn. And then the Torah levies a punishment. And there must be psukim for both. Right? The best illustration of that is going to be the Arayos. Meaning open up a chumash, open up two parshas achremos, followed then by the parsha of kedoshim. And what are you going to find? In achremos, all the Arayos lined up. Right? You cannot have relations with her, and her. And the Torah identifies who are the family members that you're not allowed to have relations with. Then what happens in parshas kedoshim? Go through the whole thing again with the punishments. Okay, so ein onshin el im kei mazirin. And that's just The Arayas was just but an example. The Gemara assumes that this is always the case. Motzi Shemra just tells us what the onish is. Where's the azara? Where's the warning in the Torah? So for that, the Gemara gives a couple of suggestions. Rabbi Lazar Amar Milo Selech Rachil. So one possibility is basically a form of Lashon Hara. You can't be a rochel. You can't be you can't be telling stories about other people, right? In this case, stories that are just simply not even true. Rabbi Nelson Amar Vinishmata Mikol Davara. Shmarta mikol davara, davar over here can also be connected to the word dibor, meaning just simply the speech by itself is in fact going to be prohibited. So when you are bedibora, so you're violating the Torah. That's an azara. Okay, and then obviously the parsha Moshe Shemra is the onshim. V'rabbelaz my time alo amar mehai. Okay, so we have two possibilities in terms of where the azara is coming from. Why doesn't each Amara like the other Amara's pasuk? So, Ahomi by Lele Chadrav Pinchas Ben Yair, Vinishmata Mikol Davara, Mikan Amara Pinchas Ben Yair, Al Yahara Dambayam Vyavali De Toma Balaila. So, the pasuk of Nishmata Mikol Davara, that is a different Isser, and that is the Isser of not engaging in lewd thoughts, because engaging in lewd thoughts, here Hurim, is going to lead to Toma Balaila. Okay. And Rabbi Nelson, my time alohamar mehai ahu azar lebeis and shalo yehi rach lezeh v'kash lezeh. And lo yehi rachil, what's that an azara for? So that's an azara for when Beis Din goes ahead and adjudicates and sees two litigants, so they should be treating both litigants fairly and equally and shouldn't be harsh to one and lighter to the other. Okay. So, okay, various ways of what each amar does with the other pasuk. When all said and done, we do have an Azara. Admittedly, we are unsure in terms of whether the Azara comes from one of two different psukim, but regardless, we have an Azara, and then the Motzi Shemra, that's the onish, that's the punishment. Okay. Lo amar le'edim bo v'heiduni, v'heim eidim oso me'aleihem. Okay. I think this is a brisa, meaning normally it starts off with the words Tanya, or Tana Rabbanan. Okay, but I think what we're looking at over here is a braisa. Let's just set it up. Okay, in the case of Motzi Shemra, so I said it earlier this morning. I said it probably yesterday as well. Probably said it 2 days ago as well. This is our third day now speaking about Motzi Shemra. This will also represent the last day that we are formally talking about Motzi Shemra. Right, these last three dapim of Ksuvos, Mem, Dalim, Mem, Hey, and Mem Vav are all the three dapim that really centrally discuss the topic of Motzi Shemra. Okay, so what happens in case of Motzi Shemra? So he levies an accusation on her, and he procures witnesses. Now, I say that. What does that mean? So, in other words, how do you get witnesses? Witnesses are just simply objective testimony about something that occurred. What does that mean? You get the witnesses. And keep in mind that we're assigning more fault to the husband because he got the witnesses. So what does that mean, he got the witnesses? That's exactly what we're discussing. Okay, so let's say the witnesses came totally on their own. Right? He didn't ask them to come. Or in just a moment, we're going to suggest even that he didn't pay them to come. In other words, they just simply came on their own. Now, it happens to be that they didn't tell the truth. But now, what does that do? It totally disconnects him from the witnesses. As such, he's not going to get Malkus. He's not going to be paying the Kenas. Okay.
I'm sorry, what disconnects him from the witnesses?
He didn't ask them to come.
Oh, they just came on their own?
They came on their own. Okay. So, Hivazal Memeh Makdim LaBeis Haskila. So now, if the witnesses turn out to be lying, she and the witnesses are going to be taken out to the base of Skila, and at this point in time, we all know a quick correction. So he vizamemes akadatcha. What do you mean? She and the witnesses. One of two possibilities: they're telling the truth, she'll be executed. They were lying, they'll be executed. So the Gemara says ella ohio zamemem akdim la base of Skila. Good. Okay. So we they needed a correction. We corrected it. It's one of the two. Either they were truthful, she'll be executed. They were lying, and when I say lying, proven to be Adam Zomimim, so they'll be executed. Now, time of the Amr Lahu, Ha Amr Lahu, Afagav Dalah, Green Allah, Fuke Medrev Yehuda. So now, Where does his culpability come in? When he asks them to come. Okay. Now, at this point in time, I'm not sure how we're going to prove that point. How do we know that he asked them to come? In other words, are there witnesses who saw him asking them to come? Then all of this becomes more complicated and more confusing. I'm not sure. But I get the basic point of the Gemara, and that is that in order to assign fault to him, he must have been more actively involved in getting the witnesses to come. But what it sounds like from the Braisa is that all his involvement needs to be is a simple petitioning. He's got to ask the witnesses to come. And this is not like the Shita of Rav Yehuda. What's the Shita of Rav Yehuda? He's got to pay them to come. So, Detanya Rav Yehuda Amreinu Chayav Ashiskor Eidim. So, according to Rav Yehuda, his culpability will only be when he offers the Eidim money. My time to Rav Yehuda Amr Rabbi Abba Asya Sima Sima Ksiv Hacha. Visam La Alilos Dvarim Viksiv Hasam Lo Sisimum Alav Neshech Malala Mamon Afkan Mamon. And has Rav Yehuda know it? It's called the Gzeir Shava. We have the word Sima twice, once clearly in reference to money, once here by Motzi Shemra. The Gzeir Shava now hyperlinks the two. And now what do we have? Money as it relates to Motzi Shemra. What money? The money that he used to try to pay the witnesses to come and falsely testify about his wife. Rav Yehuda says then, and only then does he hit the threshold of being subject to the punishments of Malkus and Kenas. Okay, so where are we right now? We need the husband's involvement to be culpable. The level of involvement, Machlokus. Whether it's just a simple verbal petitioning of the witnesses to come, or he's got to pay them. Am Rav Nachma Yitzchak v'chein tani Rav Yosef Tzidoni. Bei Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Asya Sima Sima, the Gemara quotes also in the name of the Rashbi that he also had a Gzeir Shava as well, that there has to be a monetary incentive. The husband is getting the witnesses to come. By Rav Yirmiyah, Sachem Bekarka Mahu, Bepachos Misha Vepruta Mahu, Shnei Vepruta Mahu. Right? Rav Yirmiyah asks a series of questions. Okay, this is true to form of Rav Yirmiyah. Okay, I don't have my stats for today. But Rav Yirmiyah throughout Shas will ask these very, very fine-tuning questions. Over here, according to Rashbi and according to Rabbi Yehuda, where the only time the husband is going to be subject to the Malkus and the Kenas is when he pays the witnesses. So question number one, let's say he pays them in Karka. The Gzeir Shava was clearly about money, right? In other words, currency. Karka, if through the Gzeir Shava, doesn't seem to work. That's number one. Number two, let's say it's money, but less than a Shava Pruta. Number three, what if it was a Pruta, but he gave the two witnesses one Pruta? So in other words, he did give something of minimum value, but split between the two witnesses, each one of them is getting less than a Shava Pruta. Good. The Gemara does not have the answer to any of these questions. But wait, we're not done. We got more questions. By Rav Ashi, Osi Shemra, and Nisim Rishonim, Mahu. Let's say the following. Let's say married a woman, divorced her, married her again, and now levels charges that go back to the first marriage. Okay? I admit, by the way, forgive me for judging, but does not like sound like a functional relationship. Okay, after trying again now, he then charges her back on that first marriage. You know, in that first marriage, you were infidel. You displayed infidelity. Okay. Yeah. And then, al-nisui achiv mahu. And now let's say the following, and one more question. And that's going to be, is that let's say the husband married her, a husband died, the brother did the mitzvah of Yibum, and then, as the Yavam did the mitzvah of Yibum, he charges her on Motzi Shemra charges. Is that going to have the full Motzi Shemra implications? So,
this is his brother that is doing that, not on his own, because the one
correct. Right. And it happens to be, right, point's excellent, and it happens to be that of the questions that we just asked, five in total, the Gemara is only going to resolve one of the five questions. So, Pashem Yachad Ni Rabioni Esbiti Nasat Elisha Zeh, and we're going to darshan, and the pasuk says that I gave my daughter to this man lazeh, and lazeh means specifically this man, meaning no other man can level the motzi shemra charges, meaning and not the yavam, meaning. And why would I have thought yavam? Because as we've said time and again, the yavam is a stand-in, He really serves as a substitute for his late brother. He really becomes almost like a proxy for his late brother. And so one could have argued, you could have at least attempted to think that maybe his Motzi Shemer charges will in fact be treated like Motzi Shemer charges. So when the Torah says lazeh, it means only to the principal, only to her husband, and not to any stand-in, not even the oven. Okay. Yeah. Again, what the accusation of Motzi Shemer? The case is very simple. The accusation of Motzi Shemer is that during Erusin, so you were with another man. The husband also has got to bring witnesses.
The brother, is he doing it after Erusin before Nisuin?
There was Erusin, there was Nisuin, the whole thing, and then he died. And then the Yavam comes in, and the Yavam makes the charges. Okay? It's called chutzpah. Okay? That's really what it's called. Okay.
There's no base for him. I mean, he's based on his brother, maybe, that was a source that told him that?
Or the witnesses. In other words, witnesses came in, and he really believed the witnesses. Okay, whatever the case is. Okay. Continuing. Menvav Amin Aleph, about two-thirds down on the page, Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, which we cited earlier, but now is a good time to go back and go over Rav Elazar ben Yaakov because we didn't see it inside. Again, Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, let's just do this outside first, and then we'll see it inside in the Gemara. Rav Elazar ben Yaakov says, when is Motzi Shemer charges going to be qualify as Motzi Shemer charges? Only when he was with his wife. And then afterwards, the next morning, it doesn't have to be the next morning, but then, at a later point in time, he says, you know, during Erusin, so you were Mizana, and he has witnesses. And again, if he was right, so then it's Skila. And if he was wrong, so then the punishments that we've been talking about now for the last 3 days. But according to Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, he had to have been with his wife in order to be here in the Parsha of Motzi Shemra. How did we get there? So the answer is going to be very simple. Read the Psukim. Which we're going to do. The psukim themselves would give clear indication that Motzi Shemra is only in the case where he was with his wife.
Wouldn't Motzi Shemra would get the same punishment as the object of, you know, the victim of his Lashon Hara? I mean, she's getting Sekila, but he's getting only Malka?
Well, no, in other words, her Sekila is not going to be based on his accusation. No. The only way she's going to get skila is only with witnesses. Right. It's an important point, but it's right. She's not getting skila just simply because he accused her.
But his intention is that.
It's great. It's great what his intentions are, but that's not why she's being put to death. Okay. So my rabban and my rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, the Tanya Kate said, "Otsa Hashem Ra." So Bala Beis Din Va'amar Ploni Lo Matzas LeBitcha Besulim Im Yesh Edim Shezinsa Tachta V'Yesh Laksuva Mana Im Yesh Edim Shezinsa Tachta V'Yesh Laksuva Mana. So the Brisa starts off on an incorrect point. In other words, you know, if let's say witnesses came and said that she was Mizana, so her Ksuva is downgrades to 100, and immediately the Gemara reacts to the opening line of the Brisa. What if witnesses said that she was Mizana? The downgrade of her ksuva is the least of her problems. So baskilahi, she's going to be subject to execution. So hachi kamar. So the gemara says fine. So you know the brisa needs to be edited. So that's, we're here for that. Well, let's edit the brisa. So im yesh edim shezinsa tachta baskila. So if let's say the edim come and said that she was mizana and during erusin, okay, that's called adultery, and therefore she's going to be subject to punishment and execution and skila. Or everything we've been talking about last 3 days. Now, Zinsa Meikara Yesh Laksuva Mana. Now, let's say there were witnesses that said she was with a man, but before Erusin. Oh. So before Erusin, and what happened? What happens is that she didn't disclose this information. All right? And she was embarrassed. She should have, and, you know, whatever. The point now is that it's not adultery. Okay? What it is, however, is that possibly it's a Mekachsaos. So we already litigated this earlier in the Masechta. Meaning when the man marries a woman and she didn't disclose that she was historically with another man, and otherwise stated she wasn't a basula, so does she forfeit her entire ksuva or just 100? And you'll remember, that's a machlokas. Okay, so at least the brace over here is of the position that her ksuva will be reduced to 100. Nimsa sheshemra eino shemra. Nimsa sheshemra eino shemra. Hu lo kivinosein measela bein baal bein lo baal. According to the Tanakama, now he accuses her, and it turns out that everything he said was wrong. He maligned her. So according to the Tanakama, whether he did or didn't have relations with her, he's going to be now subject to the Motzi Shemra punishments of Malchus and Nas. And Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov Amar lo nemar dvar malala l'kishaba'al. And Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov says, no, Motzi Shemra is only in the circumstance where he had relations with her. Now, Bishlam le Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, now, here's where I've been promoting this for almost the entire morning. Here we are. We're going to go through the Psukim. As indicated earlier, and you're going to see it now together, the Psukim are really in strong favor of Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. And the Gemara is going to go take us through the Psukim. So, Bishlam le Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, Hindech Zesiv, Uva Eleha, Ve'ekrav Eleha. Really, the truth of the matter is, it's so funny. Once you see the Psukim, it's really hard to argue otherwise. Okay, but number one, Ba'eleha, Ekrav Eleha. So those are languages of intimacy. So, okay, good. So Ella Rabban Mai Balah Vekravila Bala Balilos Vekravila Bedvarim. And so what you're gonna have to say, according to the Chachamim, is that Ba'ilah and Akravilah just simply means that he came close to her, not physically, not intimately, but in other words, with challenges. Okay. Not a simple reading of the Psukim, but that's a Chachamim. That's round one. Round two. Bishlam Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Haini Dichsiv La Matzasi L'Bitcha Besulim. Ella Rabbanan. My Lo Matzasi L'Bitcha Besulim. La Matzasi L'Bitcha Kishrei Besulim. Now again, this pasuk also seems to strongly indicate, like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, your daughter was not a Besula. Well, how does he know that? Because he was with her. And according to the Chachamim, how do you interpret the pasuk? Meaning, I can't, in other words, I wasn't with her, but no one's ready to vouch that she was a Besula. Even though, by the way, I'm sorry, I'm adding the parenthetical note, even though everyone, of course, has a chazakah, every woman has a chazakah of being a cheskas besulim. But, okay, that's how I'll interpret that part of the pasuk. Bishlam ala Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, hani dechsiv eila besule biti. Okay, now, for Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, so what does the husband do? So he says, this is the virginity of my daughter. In other words, you go through the pasukim kipshuto. So what's happening now is that the bed sheet that was used on the first night, so the father of the daughter is now taking it as evidence, as physical evidence that his daughter was a besula, because there will be blood in the bedsheet. So, Eila besule biti. Ela Rabbanan, my ve'ela besule biti, ve'ela kishrei besule biti. Now, again, according to the Chachamim, Motzi Shemra would apply even if they hadn't have relations. So, what's Eila besule biti? It means that there was no witnesses who came forward and said that she was a besula. Bisham la Rabbala Zman Yaakov, haina dechsiv farsu simla. Now again, according to Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, when you're spreading the sheet out in front of Beis Din, so everything is understood kipshuto, just a literal interpretation. But according to the Chachamim, what is parsu simla? So I'm Rabbi Abba, parsu mashe samla. So parsu just simply means that the matter will be clarified. Kiditanyu parsu simla malam shabam edim shozev bar mesadav kis simla chadasha. In other words, witnesses come. One set of witnesses will argue one way, another set will argue another way, and eventually everything will be clarified. Like a simla chadasha is understood over here as an analogy, but not literally. And Rav Elazar ben Yaakov amar dvarim kichsavam, simla mamash. And Rav Elazar ben Yaakov will say, no, I got a better idea. And that is, read the psukim literally, kipshuto. Okay. So what we have over here seemingly is a really basic, fundamental machlokas amongst the Tanaim, whether or not the Parsha Motzi Shemra should be read kipshuto, that's the Shita Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. Alternatively, it is to be understood slightly more allegorically. It's not an allegory, meaning, keep in mind, this is a halachic matter in terms of an accusation leveled by a husband against his wife, but according to the Chachamim, right, the various phrases in the Psukim are not to be taken literally. Okay. Obviously, it's easier to learn like Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. Okay. Where do we stand, by the way, in this machlokas? Between Rav Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim? What? Huh? Ah, great. So good. So Ben remembers. I'm going to remind all of us, myself included, that Mishnas Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov Kavanaki. So we have a general rule that Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, who we don't hear about that often in Shas, but his Mishnayos are Kav Vinaki. Okay, one of the Rishonim said it. Kav, that's 102 in Gematria. There are 102 Shitas of Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov throughout Shas. Okay, I haven't fact checked, but I Rishon said it. I think it's a Rush. Doesn't matter. The Rishonim say it anyway. He doesn't come up that often in Shas, and when he does, like it's he really sifted through his positions, and his positions are generally the accepted position. Okay, that's on one hand. On the other hand, he is a Shitas Yachid over here, meaning the Chachamim are arguing with Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. Okay, on the other hand, there's so many considerations. On the other hand, the simple reading of the Psukim do fall like Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. Okay, so in other words, toss up. And unfortunately, however you want to say it, it's not Lamaisa. In other words, Kenas and Malkus we don't have that nowadays. So it's not practical halacha, but still it's still an endeavor, a worthwhile endeavor to know who the halacha falls like. The one to look up is the Rambam, which I didn't do. I didn't do my homework well enough, because the Shulchan Aruch is not going to be discussing this, because Shulchan Aruch is only discussing halachas that are practiced to this day. And this is not practiced to this day, so the Rambam would be the person to look up in terms of who he sides with. Okay. Shalach Rabbi Yitzchak bar Rav Yaakov bar Giri Mishmei de Rav Yochanan. Okay. So, we are now at the end of the discussion of Motzi Shemra. One last point that we're going to be discussing, certainly an indelicate point, but okay. Torah hi. Alpha bishalom atzinim b'chol ha-Torah kula shechalak ha-chasav ben biya kadarka ila biya shalom kadarka lamakus alon shim. Now, as far as biya is concerned, so the actual act of intimacy, so biya kadarka, biya shalom kadarka, they both qualify as biya. Now, it happens to be that we've been through Yavamos, and we saw this already numerous times in Yavamos. I will point to the sixth parak of Yavamos, where we saw this graphically spelled out over there. But in other words, but as far as the Torah is concerned, the act of intimacy qualifies as an act of bia, whether it's done naturally or unnaturally. And unnaturally, just to be clear, that's referring to anal intercourse. So as far as the Torah is concerned, both are recognized forms of bia. And if a man has bia with a woman, and it's bia kadarka, or even if it's bia shalom kadarka, it qualifies as bia for any one of the onshim. A woman has relations with a man outside of her husband, bia shalom kadarka, that's an act of adultery. If she just simply is physical with another man, but without the act of intimacy, it's wildly inappropriate, it's infidelity, but it's not adultery. So but bia, even shalom kadarka, so that qualifies as bia. She's now subject to, eligible to, capital punishment. So under normal circumstances, where there's no chiluk, there's no distinction to be made. Okay, and then, okay, this we did in the sixth parak of Yevamos. A husband can be with his wife, bia shalom kadarka, meaning, isn't that Shikhva Zera Levatala? So Tosus discusses it, and it's discussed in much greater detail elsewhere, but it's a fair question, meaning, how does that work? Okay, anyway, but generally speaking, there's no distinction to be made.
Did the Yavam fulfill his obligation doing it this way?
So he was Kona's wife, even though there's no way she can get pregnant that way. In our Gemara, Danny, to be fair, our Gemara says that there's no distinction to be made as far as onshim are concerned. Yisurim and onshin. Okay, anyway. Avamotzi shemra chalak enu chayiv achi bol shalom kadarka v'yotzi shemra kadarka. So now, but when it comes to motzi shemra, so how does it work? He was with his wife, bia shalom kadarka, and the accusations that she was with another man, kadarka. Now that, of course, sounds confusing. And just, it's also difficult to imagine that that's the case of Motzi Shemra. So come on. And the Gemara immediately jumps on this, and the Gemara says that can't be. In other words, the way it was presented simply can't be. Come on, Ikar Rabban Nafag Avdol Abal. Remember, the Shita, the Chachamim, he didn't have to have relations with her at all and still eligible for all the punishments of Motzi Shemra. And Ikar Rabban Lazar Ben Yaakov, Idvi Idi Kedarka Be'inan. And according to Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, he had to have relations with her in the natural manner. Of course. Because what are they arguing about? I'm telling you, you weren't a virgin. Meaning, right, the husband is saying, we had relations last night, and you were not a virgin. Obviously, the bia that he had with her was bia kadarka. So, Ela Shalach Rav Kahana, Mishmed Rabbi Yochanan, Eino Chayev, Ashibol Kadarka, V'yosi Shemar Kadarka. Okay, so, right, it needed an editing, it received an editing. What it means is that, for all other Isurim and Onshim in the Torah, there's no distinction between Bia Kadarka, Bishalo Kadarka. It just happens to be that because of Motzi Shemra, and because he's accusing her of not being a Basula, that is clear indication that Motzi Shemra is only in the case where he had Bia with her, which was Kadarka. Okay, fine. Ad Kan, that takes us to the end of the topic of Motzi Shemra. Okay, so that's it. In other words, Mem Dala Mem Hei Mem Vav, the last three dapim of the of Ksuvos. So that's where you're going to find anything you've ever wanted to know regarding Motzi Shemra. Okay, we move along. Okay, here we are in the fourth parak of Ksuvos. We're moving on to Mishnayos, and we're talking now about the father's entitlements over from his daughter that he's receiving from his daughter. Soon enough, by the way, we're going to learn about Ksuvos. Okay, right. Just a general point, and that is, you probably noticed that we haven't been talking marriage much here in Ksuvos. Now, right? When's the time to talk about marriage? Probably this Masechta, right? If I had a guess, like when's a good time to talk about all the obligations and financial obligations and the general discussion regarding husband and wife? Here we are. Now, Kiddushin, by the way, is another good option in terms of when to discuss it, because Kiddushin talks about the first stage of marriage. And Ksuvos is obviously talking about the second stage of marriage. And meanwhile, and here we are on, what daf are we on? Mem Vav? Yep. Confirmed. And so here we are now, over a third of the way through the Masechta, closer to that midway point of the Masechta, and we've been spending a lot of time talking about Onis, Mefata, Motzi Shemra. Now we're going to be talking about a father's rights and entitlements to his daughter. So, in other words, when are we going to talk about actual Ksuvos itself? Okay, so here is a not such a vague comment, and that is, it's coming. It's coming. But over here, within the context of marriages, so there are other topics between man and woman that I guess, you know, if we're going to put it somewhere, so we'll put it over here in Ksuvos. But here in the fourth parak, a little bit later on, okay, can't tell you exactly when, but it's coming up. We're going to be discussing the responsibilities, the obligations husband has to a wife. We'll talk more about the ksuva, meaning that will become a discussion front and center. But I know we've been a little bit off topic for now some time. Anyway, let's continue. So let's just do the mission. Let's do the first discussion in the Gemara. It's pretty straightforward. Ha'av zaka bebito. So, as far as the father's concerned, so he's going to be zoche, meaning he has a daughter, and he's going to have a financial jurisdiction over the daughter. The benefits of all the finances that come through his daughter are going to be gained and received by the father. So, avzakai bevito, bekidusheha, bekesef b'shtar bebia. So, he can first and foremost be mekadesh his daughter, while she's a ketana, while she's a nara. Right? Once she becomes a bogera, she becomes independent. I know we've gone over this point before, but this is the Mishnah that really spells it out. So, while she's a katana, while she's a nara, he can marry her off. And the husband is going to be mekadesher. How is the husband going to be mekadesher? Either with kesef, shtar, or bia. So, obviously, the kesef, he will be the recipient of it. Shtar and bia, so he's, in other words, shtar is a, it's a document. It doesn't have any value, intrinsic value to it, but it just simply means that the father can marry her off. Also, bibia, meaning if the husband wants to be mekasher with bia, we'll remind each other. Rav mangid amanda mekash bibia. Rav did not prefer this as a method of kiddushin, but still, it is a Torah recognized method of kiddushin. And again, the father can marry her off in that manner as well. Father is also going to be receiving her and anything she finds. Father's going to receive it. Why should that be? Stay tuned. That's tomorrow's daf. Maisa yadeha, her earnings. Father's going to receive that as well. How far is the nedareha? Father can be made for her neder. Umekabel's gita, father's going to be mekabel get. Ve'ino ochel. Now Rashi points out over here, before we get to the next point of the Mishnah, Rashi points out over here, if the gerushin occurs after erusin, meaning after erusin, but before she becomes a bogeris, so she's still under the jurisdiction of her father, and therefore the father's going to be receiving the get. If, let's say, she went through both stages of marriage, erusin and nisuin, the nisuin severs her from her father, a point that we made earlier. Rashi just simply reminds us. Now, what the father is not going to do is the father is not going to eat peros. Meaning, if let's say there is any property owned by his daughter, okay, how does his daughter arrive at the point of property ownership? It could happen, right? It could be a Yerusha, even though right the father's alive and well. Anyway, let's just simply say it could happen. The point of the Mishnah is the following, and that is. Is that there's dividends that are going to come off the property. In this case, the dividends are literally the fruit. Okay? So the fruit that comes off the property. So is that now going to be entitled by the father? No. Even though it's an interesting contrast, the father is going to be able to gain her earnings, but the father is not entitled to the peros. So what do you do with the peros? Trust fund. In other words, it's part and parcel of the trust fund. And so what happens now is that with the peros they're concerned, so the peros will be sold and the dividends will be reinvested and put in the trust fund for the daughter. Nises. Now, we just talked about all the rights and entitlements that a father has regarding his daughter. Now, what about when she's married? Yes, sir. Alav abal she'ocha peros bechayeha. Husband's going to get peros. And v'chayev b'mazonosel pirkana ukvurasa. So going back to the father. I'm wrong. Now staying with the husband. So he is obligated to support her, to ransom her, and also to bury her. And Rabbi Yehuda Amar Afilani Shebiso Lo Yifchos Mishnei Chalilim Umekonenes. And Rabbi Yehuda says, as far as the funeral is concerned, so there are base minimum requirements in terms of what's necessary for a funeral. We'll come back to that point a little bit later on. Okay, because of Minalan. Okay, so we talked about the father and his entitlements that he gets from his daughter. So number one, he's Mekadosher, and he's going to be receiving the Kesef Kiddushin. So I'm Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a Krav Yatza, Chinam in Kasef. So we're looking here at the Parsha of Amma Ivriya, where a father sells his daughter. And that is that when she goes free, v'yatza chinam ein kasef. And that is that when she becomes an adult and the one who purchased her ended up not marrying her, right? We've gone over this point already a number of times. When someone purchases a katana, so it's really for the purposes of marriage. But if he elects not to marry her, neither he nor his son, so then she goes free ein kasef. And this does not turn into a transaction, meaning she simply goes free. And to that, the Gemara points out, in kasav ladon zev, yesh kasav ladon acher. Right? This adon is not going to get kasav, but there's going to be a comparable adon who is going to get kasav, amanu avia, and that's the father. So the ema lidida, the Gemara says, okay, but maybe she should be the recipient. So hasha avia mekaba kedusha, dechsiv es biti nasat elisha zeh, I shakla kaspa. So the Gemara says it's not reasonable. In other words, if he has the right to marry her off, so he's going to be receiving the Kesef Kiddushin. So the Ema Hani Mila Ketana De Leis Layad Aval Nara Dis Layad E Tikadesh Navshavi E Tishkol Kaspa. So the Gemara says, okay, but look, we can at least make the following argument. When she's a Ketana, so I get it, she has no Yad. But when she's a Nara, she is now an adult. Halachically an adolescent. Meaning that she is an adult, but she's still under the jurisdiction of her father, but she at least has some independence. So let's say that she should be getting the money while Nara. Amakra benura besavia. Koch shvach neurim leavia. So the Gemara attempts to use the pasuk from Parshas Matos that even as a Nara, so all the financial benefits will go to her father. The Gemara says that that's not the source. And hopefully this will sound familiar. Because this is now the second time in the Masechta we've gone over this. How do I know that earnings go to the father? Shenemar v'chim koreishes bitol amama ama masiyadela rabba af bas masiyadela aviha. Okay, so when it comes to an ama, so her earnings go to her master. So when it comes to a daughter, earnings go to the father. So lamali typically mi benura beis aviha. Why don't you quote the pasuk in Parshas Matos? So elahu ba'afars nadar mudichsev. I'll tell you why. Because the pasuk in Parshas Matos is talking about being made for neder. The father can be made for the neder of his daughter. So the Gemara says, okay, but can't that serve as a limud? The Gemara says, no, you can't. Mamona miser lo yafina. Nope, that's not how it works, because that is iser. That's nedarim. We're talking about mamon right now. We don't learn out mamon from iser. So vichitem anelaf mikinasa. The Gemara says, okay, but as we learned in the third parak, in the beginning of the fourth parak, when a girl is violated, there's kanas, and the kanas goes to her father. If the kanas goes to her father, shouldn't the earnings go to the father as well? Mamon mi kanas lo yafina. The Gemara says, no, that's kanas. Kanas is different than mamon. Vichitem anelaf mi boshes pegam. What about boshes and pegam? So shani boshes pegam de avianami shaychba. So the Gemara says, no, that goes to the father because the father has shaychus, he has relevancy to the boshes and pegam. The father can marry her off to whomever he wants. So that boshes and pegam, he's a baal on the boshes and pegam. So ela mistarba dechima might rachmani yitzia dekavasei kamamai. So the Gemara says, so as far as the miut is concerned, so in other words, when we are saying that she is leaving this adon as opposed to her father, so it must be that we're talking about regarding her earnings. V'halo dam yahay yitzia lahay yitzia hasam gabi adon nafka lemirushuse legamre yitzia da'ava katim mechasrei misir lechupa. So the Gemara says, well, when she leaves her adon, when she was sold as an ama ivri and she leaves as an adon, that is a total exiting. On the other hand, when it comes to the father, so that's not a total exit. she is not fully separated. In other words, she still needs a second stage of marriage. So first nadar mia nafkala mirushusei. So the Gemara says no, because even though that part's true, but there still is enough of an exit from the father. Did nan mishna nara murasa viobala mefirin la nidareha. When it comes to a nara murasa, so now the father no longer has exclusive rights to hafara, meaning it's the father only in joint effort with the husband that could be made for her neder. Okay, so there is an exit from the father vis-a-vis nedarim. Okay, so a simple question, not a simple answer. But the simple question is that all the earnings of a daughter go to the father? What's the source of that? So the answer is that we learn it from Amma Ivriya, where from Amma Ivriya, Yatzachinam ain't kasef, but for an Adam Acher, there is kasef. Okay, that's a simple way to say it. Okay, even though really the Gemara spends almost an Amud trying to fine tune exactly how that works out. Okay, we're going to stop over here. Good place to stop. Tomorrow we'll obviously pick it up. Let's quickly recap. Our topic today has been almost exclusively Motzi Shemra. We finished up a 3-day discussion in the Gemara here in Ksuvas in the fourth parak, Mem Dalet, Mem Hey, and today's daf Mem Vav, where we talked about more details regarding Motzi Shemra. So our big discussion today was the ramifications and punishments of Motzi Shemra. If in fact the witnesses are lying, and he therefore is going to be receiving Malkus and a Knas of 100 Shkalim. So that's going to be under the circumstances where they had relations the first night. They didn't have relations. That's a machlokus between Rav Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim. And most of today's daf revolves around that machlokus. The beginning of today's daf, we had a machlokus between the Tanakam and Rav Yehuda in an opening braisa, and we tried to fit that into the machlokus between the Tanakam and Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. Although admittedly, there's an alternative. There's Nika Damre, where we fit in both positions into Reb Elazar ben Yaakov, but honestly, that was challenging. Next, what we covered this morning, we know about the punishments of Motzi Shemra. Where's the Azara? Where's the warning? The Gemara cited two psukim by two different Amoraim. Why didn't each Amora like the other pasuk? We went through that as well. A whole bunch of questions of the Gemara in terms of when the husband is going to be culpable for Motzi Shemra. He has to ask the witnesses to come. Does he also have to pay the witnesses as well? That's a machlokas. within the position of, that he has to pay the witnesses. Then and only then does he have culpability. So the Gemara had a whole bunch of follow-up questions. Most of those questions went unanswered. What if he pays in karka? What if he pays them less than a shava pruta? What if he pays them, the two of them, one pruta? Okay, and five questions in total, of which we only answered one of the five questions. And finally, in terms of Motzi Shemra, we went through the psukim. Every one of the psukim really supports Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, that Motzi Shemra is only under the circumstance where he was intimate with his wife and then leveled the accusations against her, bringing in the witnesses that she was unfaithful during Erusin. One last point, and that was that the Motzi Shemra, unlike the other arise in the Torah where it's Bi Kadarka, Bi Shalo Kadarka, and there's no Chiluk, when it comes to Motzi Shemra, it has to be Bi Kadarka. Okay, and finally, father's rights and entitlements to his daughter. So the father is going to have almost all of the financial rights to his daughter. Notable exception is going to be Peros, the dividends. So the dividends do not go to the father, in contradistinction to the husband. Husband is going to be receiving the dividends of his wife, but the father is not going to be receiving the dividends of his daughter. That remains within the trust fund. How do I know that the father is entitled to all other benefits, financial benefits of his daughter? So we went through the psukim this morning, and that rounded out our daf today.